In a surprise move, Bill Bishop endorses Mayor Alvin Brown for re-election. Protests mount this week against a Jacksonville dentist, and the Jaguars pick Dante Fowler in the draft. Some of the stories making headlines this week. Good Friday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. First Coast Connect is always live on the radio. And now make sure to catch our daily podcast on iTunes. And just ahead, all the biggest stories of the week coming up with our Friday Media Roundtable. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, author Vic DeGenti joins the show. Plus, we've got a preview of this weekend's Moon Over Matanzas soiree, all of that ahead. But first, this morning, it's Friday and a very busy news week as we welcome our weekly roundtable here today. Topher Sanders of the Florida Times Union, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Fred Matthews, who blogs at The Examiner, here today.
Good morning, Melissa.
Great to see you. Our own WJCT analyst, John Burr, sitting in.
Good morning.
And Folio Weekly and Florida Politics own A.G. Gankarski.
Hi, Melissa.
Guys, it's so great to have you on the show. And man, a busy news week. There's a lot to discuss, and we're going to spend most of the hour on the week's biggest headlines. But first, our top story, another twist in Jacksonville's tight mayor's race. City Councilman Bill Bishop, who finished third for mayor in the city's first election back in March, has endorsed Mayor Alvin Brown for re-election. Take a listen.
And while we don't agree on everything, and we probably never will, I have concluded that the best mayor for the next 4 years for our city is the man who has held that office for the past 4 years. And I'm proud to stand before you all today and announce that I am endorsing Alvin Brown for re-election for the mayor of Jacksonville.
Bishop, in his run for mayor, was harshly critical of Alvin Brown during the campaign. But now, after pledging to stay neutral and endorse neither the mayor nor GOP candidate Lenny Curry, Bishop has thrown his support to the incumbent. And there is a lot to discuss around this. As we kick off the roundtable, we want to know, what are your thoughts about Bishop's endorsement? What are your thoughts about whether that will affect the mayor's race? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect and email and tweet us. Fred Matthews, let's begin with you. This was a surprise to many. Your thoughts?
Well, the best thing that the Curry camp probably could have said was that it's politics, because that's what it is. And it's a joyous time for us who observe it all, because it's great politics. It's great theater. I like the way it was written. I think in AG's column yesterday at 2:20, at 2 o'clock they met. At 2:20 they stepped onto the steps of the— It's a great time, certainly for the Brown campaign, because it's the icing on the cake. As Curry sent out his closing message to everybody this week, he sort of laid out the same themes, but this is sort of a closing argument for the Brown campaign.
AG Lenny Curry's campaign blasted the move, saying that Bill Bishop is simply being self-serving and that perhaps he was promised something in exchange for his endorsement.
Yeah, it goes deep. If you believe Curry, I talked to him last night a little bit. He said that basically Bishop was angling very strongly for a job in his administration. He wanted assurances. Curry felt so strongly about it, he talked to his lawyer immediately after talking to Bishop. If you listen to the mechanics of that endorsement yesterday, it wasn't as enthusiastic as, say, Delaney endorsement of Curry. There's a lot of passive voice in it, a lot of prevarication. Bishop was asked by me if there was a quid pro quo. He sidestepped the question. He still hasn't satisfactorily answered the question. That's really kind of the thing. It's like Bishop did make the endorsement. Maybe it has some value, but there are questions raised by the mechanics of it and Bishop's real position, because a month ago he said he wasn't going to endorse, then he endorses. And that email from his campaign team 2 weeks ago looks a lot different in the light of this. It looks like a political manipulation and game playing.
Topher Sanders, Bill Bishop, after coming in third in March, said he'd stay neutral. Reports had surfaced both Mayor Brown and Lenny Curry had courted his endorsement. They both sought it. Bill Bishop took 17% of the vote in March. That's a nice chunk of voters. Does this endorsement make a difference for the mayor's reelect?
You know, I'm not so sure that it will. The way this was done was so messy, and that normally the candidate that's not chosen does kind of sidestep and say politics. But Curry's camp didn't do that, and they went hard in the paint on how they thought this was a complete calculation on Bishop's part. And Bishop, in reading the story this morning, didn't really answer the question. To AG's point, he never denied that he was angling for some type of position in Curry's camp, unless the question wasn't asked of him in the way the story was written, but I assume it was. And it's not a flat-out denial. It's more of a, he can say what he wants to say, which isn't saying a whole lot.
And we'll go to your calls here with our Friday Media Roundtable in just a moment. Lots of calls already at 549-2937. John Burr, Bill Bishop has already declared he's going to run again for mayor in 4 years. Some observers have made the point that it's easier for him to run if there's an open seat in 2019 once Mayor Brown has termed out than it would be if he were to run against, say, incumbent Mayor Lenny Curry, who would, of course, seek a second term.
I think that's the politics that Fred was talking about, the first comment, and harden the paint. I like that. That's a good that's a good analogy, especially with NBA playoffs going on. You know, I think it'll make a difference. It's a very tight race, and I've heard there's some internal polls showing Curry with you know, some momentum here, kind of gaining ground a little bit on Brown. So every percentage point of the vote is going to count, and you know, the people who, like us, who follow every turn of the screw, but the average voter says, hey, well, you know, Bishop thinks he's okay, and I voted for Bishop. Yeah, I'll vote for Brown.
Yeah, Fred, I mean, will enough of Bishop's voters make that calculation? Here's a tweet from the LGBT PAC's Jimmy Midyet. I'm already seeing signs of movement back toward Mayor Brown from our community. The message has been received by the Bishop faithful. Your thoughts?
It is about the internal politics that's going on. It can be a little messy. That's what politics is about. We're at the closing bell here, and you've got to use everything you can if you're running for office, because it's all about winning. Bishop has made some kind of agreement, tacit or otherwise, with the Brown camp. We already know that his staff has already been with Brown's camp now for 2 or 3 weeks. They've been obviously telling their candidate, look, you need to come here. Bishop indicated that some memo was sent to the legal office downtown that could move the HRO thing in a much more appreciable position for them. And look, it's a coalition now. Curry can't claim a Democratic coalition unless he's going to get that councilman from District 8 who criticized the mayor a couple of weeks to stand with him at a press conference. He doesn't have a coalition. He doesn't have an appreciable African-American to stand with him. He doesn't have anybody on that side. All he has is what he has. Well, on this side, you've got a coalition. Now you can claim Democrats, Republicans, you can claim each side, and then you've got this big thing going on all weekend. Who says downtown in Jacksonville is dead? It's not this weekend, and this is a hard time to run for office when you've got all this noise of festivals and activity going on. It says Jacksonville is here.
AG, here's another tweet from a listener. Between the endorsements for mayor and sheriff's candidates, it seems as if the local Republicans have serious internal issues. And he's referring to Republicans crossing party lines to endorse Democratic candidates. What do you think?
Well, with the Holderfield endorsement of Jefferson, there's definitely a backstory. There's definitely back-channel stuff going on. There's more than meets the eye. Same with this one. Bishop's staff was paid in full. Rob and Jill Story were at the endorsement event, staying in the back for whatever reason. And, you know, going back to that piece about the letter to the general counsel, you have a mayor that's in office for 3 years, almost 4 years now, and his movement on this issue is to send a letter to the general counsel, you know, looking into discrimination ordinances, really. Because really, the way I look at it is this. You know, a bill was rejected 3 years ago in front of his council. The mayor wanted movement on it. The mayor wanted to bring people together, the faith-based community, the LGBTs, everybody else, small businesses. That could have been done through negotiation, through leadership. Instead, he punted on the issue. He does the letter to the general counsel. And Bill Bishop, who advocated for the HRO, who basically positioned himself as above the whole process, above the grittiness of politics, said that letter to the general counsel was enough. Again, it comes back to prevarication, comes back to a changing narrative.
Last night at the One Jacks Humanitarian Awards dinner, Topher, 2011 mayoral candidate Audrey Moran reportedly raised the roof and got a standing ovation when she accepted her award, and she demanded that both Lenny Curry and Alvin Brown stake out a clear position on the human rights ordinance. Your thoughts?
2019, here we come. That's what I think about that. I want to get back to your point you raised about the Republican power and how you're starting to see some infighting there. You know, the Republicans have run this city for a very long time, and then you had two very powerful seats now in play, the mayor's office and the sheriff's office. You're bound to see some people start to turn on each other, and we're seeing it in very visible ways, probably ways we haven't seen it in the past.
We're going to go to your calls right now on the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable as we discuss Bill Bishop's endorsement of Mayor Brown and other top stories. It's 549-2937. Craig on the north side. Hi, Craig. Thanks for holding. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Kind of. Go ahead.
Calling from underwater. Right.
Hey, Craig. Go ahead.
Can you hear me? Oh, thank you. This is a sign of change. The good old boy network is about to die. Shad Khan is endorsing Alvin Brown, and that should be the indication of who will win. It's all about following the money. And the Republicans, they understand that they're the best at business. They have no heart. You already know that. So when someone sees something like that down on the horizon, if they have good sense, they're going to do that. And you're probably going to see a little bit more of that in the future. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. That's Craig on the north side. Fred.
Well, Shad Khan's endorsing both sides. He just happens to favor the mayor in this particular race at this particular time. But, I mean, it is a bit of a it does look like it's a bit of a change, but not so fast. We still have a majority. We're still going to have a majority Republican city council. We're still going to have a majority Republican state legislature with a governor in place. So it's going to trickle down from above. But on this point here, it is going to come down to how many they can drive out in the ultimate poll on May 19th. How many people can Curry drive out, and will the folks that he drives to the polls be able to overcome that coalition that the mayor has put together?
And based on recent history, it's the Democrats who have the better ground game in Jacksonville on election day.
That is true. That said, AG, your thoughts about the ground game for both sides?
Well, we know Brown's going to have his volunteers. We know Brown's going to have outside forces brought into canvas. I mean, that's the way that it was done in 2011. That's the way it was done in the first election this time. And Curry's going to have to counter that. Curry's done it through positive messaging, he keeps saying. Since even before the first election, they haven't gone negative, he's trying to overcome a lot of the negative messaging before the first election. But, you know, last month or so hasn't been negative. He's been positive. He's represented himself as a uniter, not a divider. And we'll see if it works.
Tom on the west side. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good morning. Actually, as a uncommitted bishop voter, the endorsement that's moving me more is all the Sheriff John Rutherford endorsement of Curry. I see that as a negative. That pushes me towards voting for Brown.
Why is that?
Well, I just think Sheriff Rutherford's done a horrible job, and anyone he endorses is one I can't support.
Okay, Tom, thanks for the call. Topher.
On this issue of ground game, I had a colleague tell me that we should pay attention to the weather. Mm-hmm. So if it rains on Sunday, then give a nod to Curry. If it rains on election day, give a nod to Brown, for whatever that's worth.
Well, and you're talking about souls to the polls Sunday,
exactly,
right?
Yeah.
Fred, will souls to the polls this election weekend work its magic?
Well, that's why they bus them to the polls. They don't walk them to the polls. That's why you bus them. So it takes away all the excuses. Look, I mean, the Curry camp has done a good positive messaging these first 2 weeks out of the box after that. But the problem is that the messages that show up on television do not reflect Jacksonville as it is today. Your messaging needs to reflect who's in town. It can't reflect just one thing. And that's the thing that apparently the Curry folks have not gotten throughout this whole process. You have to include everybody in your messaging, not just this one figure that doesn't look like Jacksonville anymore. And that's the point that's missing here. And that's the point that the Republicans here in Duval County have got to get. They've got to get that everybody has to. Your campaign should look like everybody, not just like you.
What's so positive about saying that Bill Bishop was angling for a job and insinuating all these backroom deals between Bishop and Brown? I don't think that's positive. I think that's kind of throwing some mud there. I don't know. Curry going positive. don't
know. Topher.
And I want to know, just nail down what you mean by just like you. What are you saying?
Well, I mean, look, we all seen the commercials, and only what we see first is what we like or dislike. And if you're running a commercial with your wife consistently, you're running a commercial with your father consistently, you're running a commercial with your kids playing in the playground, and there's no other kids around, and nobody else. Is your wife running for mayor? Is your father running for mayor? Who's running? Are you running for mayor? And who else is with you? That's the kind of positive messaging that we're talking about that says I have a coalition. It's not just me. The term using conservative after the first round was okay. All right. You're conservative. You're running a Republican primary, basically. But after that's over, drop the word conservative, because the folks in Riverside don't feel that. The folks supporting HRS don't feel that. And the majority of African-American voters who are going to vote and a Democrat mostly, they're not gonna feel that. They're not gonna go with that.
But it's like you said, AG. It comes down to both of these candidates turning out their base, and you would have to assume that the challenge for Lenny Curry's campaign team is to try to paint a picture for people who don't know anything about him. Paint a picture of who he is, which is why you would have to assume you're seeing his wife, you're seeing his dad, you're seeing his kids in his campaign ads, because they're trying to create a persona for this candidate in the eyes of voters who don't really know much about him. That's the power of incumbency. People know who they have in our mayor.
Right, but here's the thing with Mayor Brown. Over the last couple of weeks, he has changed his messaging considerably. You know, he all of a sudden discovered that UF Health had a problem. He all of a sudden discovered that the minimum wage isn't enough to live on, and he wants the state to do something about both those issues. You know, he discovered there might be discrimination in Jacksonville, and after his general counsel gets back to him, he'll know for sure. You know, Brown's used a lot of, you know, traditional Democrat messaging in the last 2 weeks, going away from the Republican, Democrat, and independent messaging that he'd used up until that point. And the message recalibration suggests that whatever Curry's doing is working. It suggests that the internal polling on Brown's side, you know, saying, hey, we need a change. We need to, you know, get the base in order.
Let me get a few more calls on the air, and then we'll go back to you guys. Linda on the South Side. Go ahead, Linda.
Good morning. The thing I would like to know, I've been working the congesting campaign, not only this time, but last time. And I'm just a little concerned, you know, if AG has some facts that he can put in the folio about backroom deals with Holyfield or whatever with Bishop and Brown, bring it out to the public in the news. But to sit on a panel and have innuendo like, well, there's more there, there's a backroom deal. If you have the information, bring it. Other than that, you're potentially putting that information out in a slanderous way. I talked to some Republican women at the women's conference last week, and we talked about that endorsement. And what they said is they just thought Holyfield didn't do a party endorsement. He voted for the good of the city. And this was Republican women that said that. I'm a Democratic woman, but, you know, I just would like for the roundtable, I know this is talking heads and whatever, but if he has some facts, put it out there. But if you don't have any facts, don't say that you know about some. There's some backroom channels going on. If you know about it, bring it. Other than that, please leave that alone, AG. Thank you.
Linda on the South Side.
She speaks with passion, and I have reported about the machinations of the campaign situation. I mean, when you look at an endorsement, the first question you have is, well, what was a quid pro quo? At the Jefferson press conference, I asked about the claim that was made by some people that, you know, Holderfield was offered an undersheriff position. Both people denied such a claim existed. However, Holderfield is a part of the Jefferson campaign, not just in the endorsement level, but also, you know, with planning other things. I mean, that's just a fact.
Let's take one more call on the mayor's race. It's Bobby on the north side. Hi, Bobby. How are you?
Good morning, y'all. And I've been very involved in politics for many years here and served on boards. And I'm well aware of Mayor Brown's shortcomings. That's why I gave money to Bill Bishop, and I worked for him. But, you know, it comes down to this simple equation. The new boss is same as the old boss. Okay, and so
weren't the Who just in town a few weeks ago? You must have been there, Bobby. You must have been in the front row.
And you know, And if it's a choice between, you know, Boss Brown for 4 more years and Boss Curry for 8 more years, I just have to endure Boss Brown for 4 more.
Okay. So thanks, Bobby. Once again, Pete Townsend is the voice of a generation.
It is what it
Fred.
Is. I mean, look, history. 8 years ago, when John Payton ran for office, nobody knew who he was, where he came from, or anything. But guess what? A group of people did know on the north side. They remember him as a teenage kid working at the gas station at 45th and Moncrief, which was the biggest station that his father owned at that time. Move that up 18 years, he's walking down Main Street, shaking hands, eating into Democrat territory of voters. And this unknown guy, yeah, he had a little money in his pocket, but this unknown guy won the election and served for 8 years as a Republican. It can be done, but you have to pull together a coalition that is going to support what you're talking about. John was as conservative as you can be for a young politician, but he held it together. Folks supported him, and he didn't make any real people mad except for a few on the city council.
Topher.
Fred's brought this point up a couple times, and I'll ask AG and I'll ask Melissa, because I know that you guys have been paying attention to the campaigns probably more than a lot of us here on the panel. Has the Curry campaign made attempts to broaden who it would attract to the campaign? Has it been on the north side, shaking hands and meeting people? Has that happened? I don't know. I haven't seen it represented in any of the press I've read.
The Curry campaign has. They were at the St. Paul's AME Forum. They've also done outreach events on the north side. You know, you can debate how successful those events have been. There is a Republican African-American at-large candidate for city council, Sam Newby. They've been campaigning together. So, I mean, we can debate as to, you know, how broad that coalition is, how deep it is, but there is something there. Melissa might want to say more about
it. Yeah, I do think AG's right. I do think the Curry campaign has tried to make those outreach efforts. But as Fred has pointed out, building a coalition is harder than it looks. But yeah, to answer your question, yeah, I do believe they have made those efforts.
You know, especially with an incumbent African-American mayor that you're running against. I mean, that's a tough slog for Lenny Curry to take on, to try to carve votes out of the north side. I think much more productive for him to work, you know, the south side and his natural base to get those people out.
And it's a big story, but we do need to move on and discuss a few of the other news and notes from the week, because it was a really busy news week in Jacksonville and around the state. The number to join us is 549-2937. And let us know your thoughts now that a state investigation is underway into Jacksonville pediatric dentist Howard Schneider. Did you hear about this? Protesters are railing outside his office in Arlington all week long as complaints continue to mount that Schneider performed shoddy dental work and even abused kids under his care when he was pulling or treating their teeth. Schneider denies all allegations. Topher, this is just horrifying to parents who many say have complained to medical authorities for years. Nothing's been proven. He denies this, but this is certainly a story of concern to many parents.
Yeah, this is a tough story to read and to see the images of the young people, and particularly the young lady who all her teeth are in the front are gone. It's really a tough story to process. And if this has been going on for years, you just really wonder what in the bureaucracy didn't allow someone to start looking into this earlier. And I guess we still have to wait and see if any of this stuff is going to be bared out to be true. But it's a real tough story.
And for years, it's my understanding too, Fred, that this dentist was one of the only ones in the county that would accept Medicaid patients, children, low-income kids that needed dental work.
And that's one of the issues that's there. I mean, for the amount of money that Medicaid pays for people who can't afford it, this is the kind of medical help you get, which is what has always been a common cry among those who think we should have equal health care for everybody. It should be a right, not just a privilege. But the shameful part about this story is that, you know, a group of parents complained to the Department of Children and Families, and they do what? They pass the buck on because they can't, it's not in their wheelhouse to investigate.
And it gets lost in the bureaucracy. It gets lost.
Apparently, you know, complaints have mounted for many years.
You know, I have a question about it, and just don't know how the process works, but this guy, you know, kid goes in, supposed to get one tooth pulled. He pulls 5 or 6 teeth. Does he get paid by the extraction? So he makes more money if he pulls more teeth?
That's a valid question.
That's a great question.
That's a great question. And also, reports surfacing, AG, that this dentist would not allow parents to go into the room with him and his nurse while they perform the procedures, and then the children would come out telling their parents they'd been choked or hit or forced to lie on the floor. Just absolutely horrific stories.
I'll tell you, if that had been my kid, that dentist would have more to worry about than the Department of Children and Families, first of all. Secondly, though, this illustrates what happens to the underclass in this country. The underclass has no recourse in these situations. They get bullied by the doctor. They don't get recourse with the DCF. And, you know, they're forced to go to the media to ensure that their children actually have a fair hearing. And even then, it might not happen. Even then, this guy might still be practicing. Even then, this guy might still be drawing Medicaid money. That is ridiculous. It's a travesty. And this deserves a thorough and full investigation.
And at a minimum, even though we don't know where the end of the investigation will take us, the awareness factor out there. Can't imagine a lot of parents are going to be lining up to go to this doctor, but given opportunities and given who you can go to, they may have no choice, but at least now people will know.
And to make sure that we are being even-handed with this story, let's point out once again that this dentist has denied the allegations and says he's the victim of a smear campaign.
And he does mm-hmm. have supporters. There are several parents have come out in support of him as being a good dentist to their children.
Mark on the South Side. Hey, Mark, what are your thoughts about this story?
Yeah, I just wanted to say it's great that everybody's, outraged about a couple of losing extra teeth that, you know, they didn't pay to get pulled out. But I think it would be more beneficial to talk about the other children who get abscessed and get other diseases because they cannot afford to go to a dentist at all.
Yeah, thank you for that, Mark. And that actually brings us to the next story in our queue today. It has to do with the meltdown in Tallahassee after Republicans in the House and Senate couldn't come to terms on how to get health care to low-income patients in Florida. Democrats in the Florida Senate are suing the Florida House over the abrupt end of this year's legislative session. The House adjourned a few days ago due to a disagreement with the Senate over health care spending and whether to expand Medicaid. They were supposed to keep working until today. Now, Democrats want the Florida Supreme Court to order the House back for the final day. They say House leaders violated the state constitution by leaving early. John Burr.
Well, you know, this train wreck has been shaping up ever since the first day of the session. And this is a major meltdown because not only has this healthcare situation, which is a huge potential problem, festered, but a lot of very necessary legislation has gotten held up in the process, and in fact, the whole state budget is held up in the process. They've got to get back. The legislature has got to get back to Tallahassee, and somehow they've got to craft some sort of compromise here, which the House is not really good, got a good history.
And the
doing.
Sticking point, Topher and Fred, is the Florida House. Earlier in the hour, someone tweeted us about divisions in the local Duval County Republican Party. Well, we're seeing that same schism in the Florida between the Florida House and the Florida Senate. The more moderate Senate is saying, let's expand Medicaid. The more ideological Florida House is saying, we're drawing a line in the sand. We will not expand Medicaid, thus leading to this meltdown.
Kind of goes back to how the election boundaries are drawn. You know, you have a very conservative House basically saying we need to get reelected and we can't go back to our constituents and cave on this. And so we're going to stick our feet right down and not move.
Fred.
Well, I mean, we get the government that we vote for. I mean, that's the bottom line here. But this is a major stain on House Leader Chris DeFooley's leadership. This is just a terrible stain. You can't lead if you aren't going to be able to push and cajole, and you certainly should not leave. You're getting paid, for goodness, on a daily rate for being up there, and you mean to tell me you're going to walk off of the job because you guys can't agree? It's not as if you're having an argument between Democrats and Republicans. You have an argument between the Democrats, and the governor. And imagine the spectacle of the governor and our legislature suing the federal government because they don't want the federal government to force them to take me that benefit their own constituents. But you
bizarre.
I mean, it's just a bizarre.
Well, the other thing is, this is going to blow up into a national story very quickly. There was a Sunday story in the New York Times on this about page 8-6 or 8-7, but in the next 2 weeks, this is going to be on the front page of the New York Times. This is going to be all over the network news. And it's another stain on the state of Florida.
AG.
Yeah, and really there are historical parallels to this in terms of the dysfunction. You know, when the Democrats controlled the legislature and the governorship in the 90s, they had similar issues of dysfunction with getting things done. It led to a shift in the state. Could this happen with this? I mean, they got, what, 24 bills through this term? That's not acceptable. I mean, and it kind of goes back to the infighting in the Republican Party of the state before the legislative session with the leadership and all of that. There are things going on under the surface that are unreported that are probably leading to a lot of this.
Let's go to Chuck at the beaches now. Hi, Chuck. Your thoughts?
Hi, guys. I wanted to tie in the positive aspect of Obamacare with this. One of the positive things about Obamacare is that it requires the insurance company to fund mental illness treatment and substance abuse treatment. It's affordable and it works. And unfortunately, if I understand correctly, in Obamacare, there's not the dental perspective of it. And that's huge because if you look it up across the United States, there are people who can't get Medicare and Medicaid and they can't get dental care. So the great thing about Obamacare is that it demands that substance abuse and mental illness has to be treated. If we could tie the dental into that, and here's one other thing about the Obamacare, you have to make $11,000 in the state of Florida to get it. If you don't make $11,000, you can't get it, and I don't think you can get Medicare, Medicare. So, we're very fortunate, and I don't know what's going to happen to it. But and here's one thing you're talking about, the voting, and I'll finish.
Okay, yeah, Chuck, we're running a little tight on time.
Okay,
thanks for the call, Chuck. Yeah, thanks for the call, Chuck. I appreciate that, and sorry to cut you off, but we need to move very quickly and mention that on the football front, the Jaguars selected Florida's Dante Fowler in the first round of the NFL draft Thursday night. Topher Sanders, your thoughts?
I mean, everything about it looks like a good pick. You can't really go wrong shoring up your defense. Fowler looks like he's ready to go. And so we'll see. And, you know, you can have the personnel, but you really got to have the game plan and the schemes to make everything work. So this will now be on the coaches to come up with good planning.
Fred.
Well, I'm looking for running backs and I'm looking for receivers for this team. I think it's a good pick. There's no doubt about it. It wasn't, you know, the blow them out of the water for the first round, but, you know, they picked what they wanted. We knew where Jameis was going and we knew where Mariota was going, so it wasn't any big thrill for the night. But I'm looking for running backs. I'm looking for some power.
Todd Gurley.
Speaking of thrills, how about Dante Fowler's wardrobe when walked across the stage, especially his shoes?
Yeah, you wouldn't think he'd be able to afford that in the Stafford Loan and Work Study, but there we are.
we won't discuss that.
Yeah, I mean,
this is a fly guy. He's got some really, he had $7,000 gold encrusted shoes on. This is a guy who's going to make a splash.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely had the sartorial game tight. Here's, you know,
Gator Alumni Fund,
you know,
or something. Or
I mean, beyond the $7,000 shoes, I mean, here's the thing. Gus Bradley knows what his defense is supposed to look like. He sees versatility in Fowler. He sees a guy who doesn't take plays off. He sees somebody who can fit into a lot of things that scheme's going to do. This is the third year for Bradley, third year for David Caldwell. They need to show results this year, and they didn't hesitate making the pick, so they're going to ride or die with this one.
Well, hopefully they have a good season. Finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week across the state. Luckily, there is never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. Now, only in Florida do people try to cash checks in the amount of $368 billion.
Speaking of mental illness.
Yeah. Jacksonville authorities say Jeff Waters walked into a Bank of America Monday and attempted to cash that check. Tellers were immediately suspicious, but Waters explained to the bank teller that a homeless man named Tito gave him the blank check several months ago and said it would clear for any amount of money he wanted to write it for. Waters wanted the money, the $368 billion, that is, to start an Italian restaurant.
Mamma mia.
I think you could buy Italy for $368 billion.
Only in Florida do people try to steal an entire cooler of ice cream from their gas station. In South Florida, police say 25-year-old Dennis Norman was caught cold after stealing the cooler of Tasty Treats. He's seen on surveillance video quietly pulling the cooler away so as not to disturb the sleeping attendant nearby. Broward Sheriff's officers found Norman fast. Now he's cooling off in a jail cell.
In the words of Master P, Mr. Ice Cream Man.
And finally, only in Florida do people going through their grandparents' attic find a treasure map and a human hand. Yeah, Mike Lopez tells WFLA in Tampa his sister was cleaning out the attic when she came across a wooden box. Inside, a photo of their great-grandparents, some coins, a map, and what appeared to be a human hand. Lopez brought the findings to the Tampa Bay History Center. It turns out the map is likely a blueprint from the 1920s, and it bears the name Gasper, which they believe could be connected to Florida pirate Jose Gasper, who inspired the annual Tampa Festival Gasparilla.
Can anyone say Goonies the sequel?
Experts are not sure if it was a real human hand, though. Further examination is needed, but that's a great Florida story right
there. The hand
there.
Had a ring on it, by the way.
Yes, it did. It had a ring on it.
So these are actually human bones, right?
Always great to see you guys. Thanks for a wonderful roundtable. Fred Matthews, John Burr, Topher Sanders, A.G. Gankarski. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, too.
Thank you.
And we're back in a moment with author Vic DeGenti.
Relax around the clock with the music of your life. Playing great music from Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald to James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and more. Relax Radio, WJCT, 89.9 HD3. Learn more at wjct.org/relax.
Never know how much I love you.
Who will be Jacksonville's next sheriff? Ken Jefferson and Mike Williams emerged among seven hopefuls to replace term-limited John Rutherford. WJCT has teamed up with First Coast News and the Florida Times Union to present the Jacksonville Sheriff Debate. Listen to the Sheriff Debate Tuesday, May 5th at 7 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT FM.
WJCTnews.org is your source for the latest local, national, and international news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Podcasts of your favorite local stories and shows, the WJCT First Read every weekday morning, and playlists from all of our after-hours music programming. From your computer or mobile device, see it all at WJCTnews.org.
Welcome back. Well, First Coast author Vic DeGenti has just published the third book in his acclaimed Quint Mitchell mystery series, a page-turner titled Hurricane Island. The story is set in Cedar Key, and all the action takes place in just 24 hours. Vic is also presenting a full-day writer's workshop next Saturday, the Novel in a Day workshop, a benefit for the Florida Heritage Book Festival. Vic DeGenti, a pleasure as always. Good to see you. Good morning.
Melissa, great to be back. I appreciate the invitation.
Now, tell us about Hurricane Island. This sounds fascinating.
Well, Hurricane Island pits Quint Mitchell against a hurricane, as you might guess. A killer, and a psychic in a purple evening gown.
Nice. And it's all set on Cedar Key, a beautiful little place.
Oh, it's wonderful. They build themselves as the little town that time forgot.
Right.
And Quint goes there on what's supposed to be a relaxing weekend with his girlfriend. He's meeting up with an old Navy buddy, and the buddy and his wife are going to take them around the island. They're going to do a little fishing, a little relaxing, kicking back. But of course, being a Quint Mitchell mystery, things don't work out that way. They go horribly wrong. They're involved in murder, kidnapping, and all kinds of things.
You've had success with the Quentin Mitchell character and as an author, and you've been so generous in sharing what you've learned with others. So you've got a big event coming up, right?
We do. Next Saturday, May the 9th, I'll be in St. Augustine at Flagler College and putting on a workshop, a full-day workshop I call Novel in a Day. And I've been doing this for about 10 years, Melissa, and probably 200 or 300 people have gone through this workshop, and many of them have ended up writing books. And we go through every element that it takes to write a novel, the characterization, plot and structure, dialogue, writing scenes, etc. And I wish I had taken this course before I started writing, because I probably would have learned a lot and cut out a lot of the mistakes I'd made.
Well, like what? What are some of the biggest mistakes a new author does make?
Well, first of all, we tend to overwrite, especially at the beginning, put in a lot of backstory. We feel that the reader wants to know everything that's gone into this character's life, what they had for dinner, why they're in this kind of trouble. And in this day and age, people have a very short attention span. They want to get right into the story. So you have to start very close to the beginning. So you get in late, as they say, and you get out early. So that's one of the big things. And then just writing dialogue, talking about setting, etc. Those are things that are learned by writing and reading and doing it over and over.
And you just really are such a talented writer. People are lucky to get the benefits of your experience. So if people are just now tuning in and hearing about this, how can they be part of this workshop?
Well, they can go to fhbookfest.com, which is the Florida Heritage Book Fest website, and they can get all the information and register. It's $95 for the full day. They get a lunch, they get coffee in the morning, they get my workbook, which has about 30 pages in it, and they'll learn a lot. It's very fast-paced. It's upbeat, a lot of interaction. And exercise, both group exercises and individual exercises. Mm-hmm. It's a terrific workshop.
And Hurricane Island in stores now. Where can people pick up the newest in your series?
Well, immediately, if I can plug myself, tomorrow I'll be at the Barnes & Noble at St. John's Town Center from 1 to 4 p.m. doing a book signing. So I invite everybody to come out. Tomorrow's supposed to be a beautiful day. Come on down.
Absolutely. Go on out tomorrow and get a signed copy of First Coast author Vic DeGenny's latest Hurricane Island. That's tomorrow from 1 to 4 at the Barnes & Noble at the St. John's Town Center. The first Saturday in May, before you have your derby parties tomorrow night, go hang out with Vic. They're going to have beautiful weather. So
absolutely.
I hope you get a nice long line of fans. And thank you so much for being with us.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, he's First Coast author Vic DeGenny. The new book is Hurricane Island. Go meet Vic tomorrow at the Barnes & Noble at the St. John's Town Center and sign up for that writer's workshop, too. That's a great opportunity. We're back in a moment. This is First Coast Connect.
Hi, I'm Miguel Sanon.
I'm Nora Jones.
My name is Pedrito Martinez.
I'm Christian McBride with Jazz Night in America. Our new show is bringing you inside the jazz world. We're headed to concerts around the country, from New York to L.A. to D.C., and we're talking directly to musicians, finding out how and why they do what they do. Join me right here for Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Obama administration is pushing for fast-track authority for the TPP, an international trade deal. But many Democrats are opposed. Debate over giving the president fast-track authority. Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, it's a sold-out inaugural event for the St. John's Cultural Council this weekend. Under the light of the full moon, the Moon Over Matanzas soiree will feature hundreds of guests as they mix and mingle aboard the El Galeon with an incredible Spanish menu and all funds raised to benefit the county's Art Reaches programs. Jeff Smith is Director of Strategic Partnerships with the St. John's Cultural Council. He's also the new arts director for the Duval County Public Schools. Kudos on that, and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Great to be on.
Great to have you. Moon Over Matanzas. I've been seeing the signs for this everywhere. It just looks so enticing, and unfortunately, it's sold out, which means you've done a wonderful job with this. Tell us what's going to be happening.
Yeah, it's going to be a terrific event, and we're really excited because obviously it's not every day you get to climb aboard a 16th century Spanish replica and enjoy the moonrise in the evening as you sip some fine wine and some wonderful food from By Design Catering. So we're going to invite guests around 7 p.m. this Sunday, over 200 guests, to join us aboard El Galeon as we hear Spanish guitar played by Dennis Furman, who's absolutely fantastic. Enjoy some wonderful hors d'oeuvres from By Design Catering. We'll have wine, beer. We will have some wonderful drawing items from Players Championship tickets to a night at the Casa Monica Hotel to a few nights at Casablanca Inn, art studio tours, Ping with a Twist, some wine tasting. So there are a lot of wonderful things. But what we're most excited about is launching some huge banners that we'll have aboard the ship for our Art Reaches program to really invite the public and the community to understand what it is the St. John's Cultural Council does and how their investment in our work can support more arts organizations and artists and the entire community.
Right, because even a small investment in the arts pays dividends, and there's hard data to support that, correct?
That's true. There's a lot of data that shows that, obviously, through the work of supporting the arts, you have, from the tourist perspective, more people coming to our hotels and restaurants, enjoying everything that you have to offer in St. John's County. And then for local residents, you have from children who are able to reach their fullest potential in school and through after-school programs and scholarships to go on to studying college, to adults of all ages. Quite frankly, we're really excited about our programs for seniors, which include dance, art, music, and theater, and how I visited a class a few weeks ago at a library where seniors were painting and learning how to paint watercolor, and new programs we're hoping to expand for veterans in particular. We're really excited about partnering with the Veterans Council, and we've given some talks with them, and we had someone from Americans for the Arts come down to visit with us, and really creating programs that fill needs in the community, because there are so many people who want to express themselves and the arts provide that opportunity.
And let's talk for a minute about the El Galeon, the incredible Spanish replica that is in the waters off St. Augustine. This is where the Moon Over Matanzas soiree is going to take place. This is courtesy of Spain. They delivered a full-size reconstructed Spanish sailing vessel used in earlier colonial times. People have seen this dock. This is an amazing thing. Can you tell us a little bit about the El Galeon?
I can tell you a little bit, and I'm hoping that if you can't make it to the event Sunday night, you will make the trip down to St. Augustine, to the St. Augustine Municipal Marina, where you can get a tour during the day. Because this replica is obviously very authentic. It took years to put together and many, many dollars. They have a full Spanish crew, and we're very excited and proud and appreciate all the support that crew has given us. And they will be going on a tour, and all of the dates haven't been secured yet, but coming up in the months ahead, they'll be going around the country and docking in different ports to be able to share this wonderful vessel with people around the country.
Now, for the party this weekend, will the ship be docked or will it be sailing up and down?
It will be docked. For insurance reasons.
Okay.
and also for those guests who might get seasick. So it will be docked, but you'll be able to tour the entire ship. You'll be able to look at the captain's quarters, go down below deck. We'll have pictures, a slideshow showing the work that we've done throughout the community. And you'll be able to, again, meet the crew, talk to them, learn more about the ship and its history and how it came to be.
Very exciting. And, of course, not only are you involved with the St. John's Cultural Council, you're also starting a new position with the Duval County Public Schools. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'm very excited. In a few weeks, I'll be joining Duval County Public Schools as Director of Arts. to help oversee the visual and performing arts programs through our school system. And I'm really excited because with Dr. Vitti as our superintendent and with all the efforts going on with the community, with public-private partnerships, with Any Given Child Jacksonville, and other efforts underway in the work of Cultural Fusion, which I've been proud to be a part of, there's a great sense of collaboration in the entire community coming together to expand arts learning opportunities. So I really want to make sure we're providing access and equitable access for all students to have high quality arts programs throughout our district. And so I'll be calling upon everyone in the community, all those I know and don't know, to make sure that we can support those efforts.
You are an incredible advocate, and it's too bad that Moon Over Matanzas is sold out, because I know people listening just would love to go. Thanks for sharing it with us, though, Jeff. Have a great time.
Thank you so much. And if you're interested in more information about our work, you can visit our website, www.stjohnsculture.com or www.historiccoastculture.com.
All right, and that's our program. Thanks so much for tuning in, and thanks to all of our guests and callers. This show's producer is Sean Birch. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. Make sure to listen to Diane Rehm up next with a look at the week's top national news stories. For now, I'm Melissa Ross, and this has been First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. Monday. Get out and enjoy this beautiful weekend.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.